David, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
Doing well, Scott. How are you?
I am very well today, and I have talked to my sources. I have now found out Dan Murphy has not been acquired by the Calgary Flames broadcast, but that's about all that Brad Treliving has not taken from Vancouver this offseason. Have you ever seen a mass migration like this in one free agency?
Oh, man, I'm trying to think. I mean, usually when you get a mass migration, it's because you have a multiplayer trade. You know, the Leafs in Calgary engaged in that massive trade a couple of times, once for Dion Phaneuf, and obviously the big one was for Doug Gilmour back in the day. You know, when you get those 7-8-player deals, then you kind of can say, okay, we've taken a few of their players. But one by one, sort of hand-picking the players, it's pretty wild. And listen, one thing that is adding a layer of excitement, we're all hoping and maybe expecting, especially with the pandemic numbers escalating as they are, to have this all-Canadian division coming our way once play resumes and the next season begins. Imagine what it would be like, Calgary and Vancouver, which, you know, they have a rivalry, and then certainly they met in the playoffs a few years ago and everything else, but that would be heightened. That'd be next level now when you add in everything that's transpired in the last month. It's going to be pretty exciting. So you don't see it very often, but I think it's very cool, and I'm sure that adds to the intrigue. And also maybe for a guy like Josh Levo, the familiarity was something, you know, it's nice to land with some people that are familiar with you. So, you know, maybe that factored in as well to his decision-making.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear from Levo at some point. I was surprised simply because the opportunity into a bigger role offensively would appear more present in Vancouver than in Calgary, where the top two lines are pretty set unless they make a trade here at some point, David.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, without talking to Josh Levo, not knowing specifically what the discussions were like with Brad Treliving and the Flames brass and, you know, what promises, if any, were made. You never, you know, you're not someone with Josh Levo and I can say, well, we're promising you top 6 minutes, but I'm sure what Brad Treliving said is, we see you as a guy that we could utilize up and down the lineup. We've seen the success you had at times with the Canucks when you were healthy. You know, he has size, he has some skill, and he has some versatility. And I think those are all things that are coveted by most NHL teams. So, I'm interested to see what he can do. I like Josh Levo as a player, and he loves bouncing around these Canadian teams, right? The Leafs to the Canucks to the Flames, and we'll see if he migrates further to some of the other Canadian teams as his career goes on. But it's a nice, cheap addition for the Flames indeed.
Yeah, it is, and I think it's one Vancouver would have liked to have kept. There's a lot of time for Josh Levo with the coaching staff as well in Vancouver. David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, joining us here this morning. There's a couple of stories out of Arizona. One is potentially positive, and the other does not look very good right now. Let's start with the positive one. There is talk that Shane Doan may return to the organization. That only seems right and would be a boost for an organization that's a little down on its luck right now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, Shane Doan, I mean, his reputation around the league's impeccable. You know, he's synonymous with that team. If you say, you know, Phoenix or Arizona Coyotes, what comes to mind? Shane Doan should be first, you know, it's probably the first name that would come to mind. You know, he spent such a long time there with 2 decades worth of hockey, put together an incredible resume, and, you know, was a pillar in that community as well. And that being the case, you know, the original, you know, he was there from the start in Phoenix and Arizona when it came over from Winnipeg. So I think it's a great move. It would make sense. I'm not sure it's official yet, but certainly there's some rumblings about it. And I think it makes, you know, what he played, 1,500 plus games in that marketplace after they went over from Winnipeg. I mean, it just makes sense. And if nothing else, they're looking to sort of add some goodwill in a market that could use some goodwill and some familiarity, and he'd be a perfect person to provide that.
He would. And they might need even more of it after today. I know you've seen this story. It's circulating right now online. The Coyotes draft pick this year in the 4th round, Mitchell Miller. There's some stuff about his past coming out right now. And this is a young man who repeatedly taunted, according to police reports and according to the young man involved on the receiving end. He taunted a person with developmental disabilities. He also used racist language against the young man who happens to be black. And it's the type of story that often leads to players getting passed over. And yet there's some outrage, certainly on behalf of the recipient of the abuse and his family, that this player was selected by the Coyotes. It's a difficult story, David, for a lot of different reasons. Did the Coyotes make a mistake here?
This is tough, Scott. I read the story today from the Arizona Republic, and it's worth looking at. And as you said, it's a hard story to read. You know, it goes beyond taunting. There was physical, it's a physical altercation, and you know, bullying doesn't even do it right. I mean, there was a criminal act involved in this. Something really disgusting that happened when Mitchell Miller was 14 years old. He and another boy did to the young victim. And you know, I read through it, and I just sort of said, I'm all for second chances. People make mistakes, but I'll tell you something, just from a human standpoint. I mean, I'm a father. I have a 14-year-old son right now. My, you know, when you're 14, you know the difference between right and wrong. You do. And I'm not saying you're fully developed as a person, and I'm not saying you don't deserve second chances, but I'm not sure the upside outweighs the downside in this situation. What concerned me in the article was that the young victim's mother, she expressed some, you know, she was angry and heartbroken, might be a better word, that this young man is being given this incredible chance of a lifetime by an NHL team, when she felt he didn't really show much contrition after they were caught. There was video surveillance of some of the things that happened to her son, and it went to a court of law, and basically there was two boys involved, and the other boy broke down in tears and seemed quite, you know, upset by his actions and was very apologetic, and it seemed heartfelt. And according to her, Mitchell Miller was pretty much just making excuses. His parents were making excuses. There wasn't a lot of contrition there. You know, what has this person learned? Has this person, is he a better person, a different person than that 14-year-old, you know, who did some horrible things? I wouldn't call it a mistake when you intentionally do something, who just did some horrible things. I don't know. And whether the Arizona Coyotes have better information than I have or anyone else, that's, you know, we'll wait and see. I'm not sure if it's worth it to put your neck out there for someone who acted the way this kid acted, albeit 4 years ago. So time will tell. The management side of Arizona, their take on it was they knew what happened, that all 31 teams knew the situation with this kid's background, and they did the due diligence, and they felt, hey, this is a good environment for him. They have the first Latin American ownership group in Mr. Morello. You know, they have a president who's the first Latin American president and CEO, and Xavier Gutierrez. So they feel, you know, they're part of the NHL's executive inclusion committee, which was started up in the last year with Gary Bettman and some of the key ownerships groups to try and make the hockey place a more inclusive and diverse place. And they feel this will be a good environment for this young man to nurture and learn and be a leader, talking against some of the actions that he was a proponent of earlier on, you know, in his life. So we will see. Maybe it'll have one of those storybook endings to it, but I'm a bit leery when I read through it. And I just, you know, it was pretty, you know, you read it, right, Scott? I mean, you know what
I'm
talking about.
Yeah, I did. I read it in the break, David. It's disturbing, right?
Yeah.
And I think everything you point out is correct. And when something like that happens, which, as you said, I wouldn't call it a mistake. It's an incident. It's part of a checkered past here. You would hope that the person in question, the offending party, realizes the gravity of what has been done. And since that time, has been doing all of the work and all of those things to try to become a better person and make sure it doesn't happen for someone else. And I can't speak to whether the player here, Mitchell Miller, has done that or not, just like you said. But if I'm the Coyotes, that's the first question I'm asking. Because those the types of things that are described here are the types of things you spend the rest of your life trying to make sure don't happen to somebody else, and that you try to make society better for having done them, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's a calculated risk. I mean, you bring someone in who has a certain toxicity to their behavior, and if he hasn't learned from his past behavior and he's been in an enabling situation, whether it's through his family or friends or the school board or whomever, He served 25 hours of community service for what he did. But has he truly learned his lesson? And again, everyone deserves a second chance. I'm just wondering, you know, if I'm one of the 31 NHL teams, I'm just wondering if I go, well, I'll allow someone else to give them that chance. I'm not sure I want to put my team in that environment. I'm not sure I want to bring that person into our community. And I know that sounds harsh. No one's perfect. Everyone makes mistakes. But I'm just wondering if the upside outweighs the downside. Again, I imagine it's up to each 31 individual teams. It's incumbent on them to go out there and do their own due diligence, and they have to make their own, sense of it. Is it someone you strike off the list and just say, we can't draft this guy? I mean, I've talked to Brian Burke at length, not about this specific case, but about, how he would go about his drafting. And there were certain guys, they'd come into the interview and they walk out of the interview and they go, we can't draft that kid for whatever reason. They just did something that they felt it just wouldn't be a good fit. It was something they didn't want to have to work on. There was a lack of maturity, let's say, or a lack of brightness that they were looking for, whatever the case may be. And I wonder if what, this young man did at 14 would negate many teams from saying we can take a chance on him, because it was just a pretty horrible act, and maybe he hasn't shown the right level of contrition and he hasn't learned from it as well as we'd like him to. Arizona, on the other hand, feels that he has. So time will tell, but it's a difficult situation. And now with it out there in the public sphere, everyone's going to sort of maybe keep an eye on this young man's career for different reasons. And we'll see if he can become a good citizen, which would be great.
Yeah, it certainly would, and it's a difficult subject, but I'm glad you were willing to take it on with me. I think it's important we talk about these things. Sportsnet's mm-hmm. David Amber, he of Hockey Night in Canada as well, joining us this morning on Sportsnet 650. Let's turn our attention to other things that might be changing with the National Hockey League. More scuttlebutt that some GMs out there would like to see the draft lottery amended. I'm okay with where it's at. Maybe tweak the percentages here and there, but I think I'm in the minority. Where do you stand on amending the draft lottery?
I love the drama of it. I'm one of those maximum chaos is kind of fun guys, but I know, I work with some pretty traditional guys who just find it incredibly hokey. They find it also frustrating because the idea of the lottery is not for a team that makes the playoffs like the New York Rangers and has a good, nucleus. They're certainly on the mend and on their way up. The idea for a team, that finishes whatever New York finished, 19th or whatever it was in the standings, to make the playoffs and then get the first pick, it's not what it's about. When you have Detroit, who had who finished, lapped the field in last place, and we haven't seen with the way the draft lottery's weighted, I believe the last time the bottom team picked first was the Toronto Maple Leafs back with Austin Matthews. So we're talking now 4 years ago that it's been since it's really played out as if you finish with the worst record, you get the first pick. So I see the argument against it. I don't have such a problem. I think you can maybe change the weights of it a little bit. I think they went, what'd they go down from, Scott, from like 25% to 20% or something like that? Is that right? Does that sound right?
Yeah, no, I hear you. And no, you're right. It's kind of around there right now. And I'm more in favor of that, David, because as much as we always think about the team that finishes last that year, I think of a team like Colorado from a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Like Colorado already had McKinnon. They had a really bad year. Were they a bad team or did they just have a bad year? Because you can have an off season and still have a good nucleus. And then all of a sudden, if we're handing out top draft picks to the last place team, you get to add a player that way, and there are other teams that are actually worse structurally overall that could use the help even more. And I know we look at the team at the bottom. I feel bad for the teams in the middle, quite frankly, because teams like Minnesota have tried. Like, they've tried to be good, and they just haven't gotten over. And so are we going to say, well, sorry, you can't have any of the good draft picks? You don't have a chance for that?
You can change the weighting. I mean, I just as you were talking, I just typed in NHL draft lottery odds because I couldn't remember. Detroit, who finished miles behind Ottawa with the worst record in the NHL, they had an 18.5% chance of landing the first pick. So not only did they not land the first pick, but, I mean, they fell three spots all the way to the fourth spot. And in this specific draft, if you talk to the big draft experts, the Sam Cosentinos of the world, there were three sort of can't-miss, surefire prize possessions. A very good draft, a deep draft, but there were sort of three guys above the rest. There was Lafreniere and then, of course, Byfield and Stutzla. So, poor Detroit, I mean, they obviously got off with a good player, but it's not maybe as a big a lock as it would have been. So, you know, I I'm on the side of I don't mind it. I think maybe they might want to go back to give that bottom team 25% chance as opposed to 18.5% chance, at least give them a 1 in 4 chance of winning the lottery as opposed to less than a 1 in 5 chance. But I personally, I really don't have such a problem with it. I like the idea of you don't want to have teams, tanking is the wrong word, but just you want to have teams going out there and trying to win games, and you want to incentivize that. And by giving too great an opportunity to pick first overall, you de-incentivize that. And it's not fair to the fans who go out there and spend their hard-earned money in an 82-game schedule to say, well, we're gonna have lesser players out there because we're dying for that first overall pick. So I don't mind the way the system's set up right now, I'll be perfectly honest with you.
One last one for you here. We don't know when the NHL is going to start. We keep hearing speculation. And as we go through the weeks, I do wonder, David, if the NHL looks around North America right now, and as bad as the climbing cases of COVID-19 are, from a business standpoint, we still see leagues like the National Football League letting people into their stadiums. I wonder at some point if the NHL says, we're going to get this going sooner than maybe we expected, because some places are going to be allowed fans, even if not all of them are.
Yeah, I'm wondering what's going to go into the decision. I'm not going to, I'm not privy to it. I think the NHL is eager to start, and even if it has to start in an imperfect way without fans, then graduate to partial fans, as we've seen in many venues, and then hopefully by the time the playoffs roll around in May and June, etc., then you get into, let's say, full fan situation depending on the marketplace. I think that's something the NHL would accept. I think there'll be some owners who would say, no, we need the fans in the seats. But there's a lot of factors at play. There's a TV deal in the U.S. that's coming up after one more season. And if they don't play this year, then that would be pushed back a year. So, I mean, that is a new revenue stream that will be coming in towards the National Hockey League. And that's something that the commissioner, Gary Bettman, can sell the owners on. We got to play out this season and get through to a new TV deal, which could be, very lucrative for us in the U.S. So there are reasons to play, and you want to stay omnipresent. And, from just a fan standpoint, I mean, look in your marketplace where you have Pedersen and Besser and, Quinn Hughes, and you look in Toronto and with Matthews and Marner, et cetera, and McDavid and Drysdale, Edmonton. You don't want to sacrifice, I'd hate the thought of we miss a year of these guys' careers. It still bugs me that we miss a year of, Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin when they were coming into the league when there was the shutdown in 2004 and everything. So, to me, I think they're going to do everything in their power to get up and running. But, of course, we're at the mercy of this pandemic, and they got to figure out a way to come back. And it's maybe even more complicated, Scott, than it was coming back for the playoffs where you had fewer teams and you had two locations, because they're not going to go back to a traditional bubble situation. They've said that. So that makes it much more complicated. So I'm interested to see how it's going to shake down.
As am I. And David, forgive me for my memory on this, but in your first go-around with CBC, did you ever cover any Canadian Football League back in the day?
Way back in the day when I was, my first sort of network job was in Calgary with TSN as a reporter, before Sherry Ford and then Jermaine Franklin were out there. And of course, we have Ryan Leslie out there for Sportsnet. So many, many moons ago. Yeah, I did. Why? What's going on?
Well, unfortunately, some sad news. David Braley has passed away today. The BC Lions announcing the longtime owner in the Canadian Football League and previous to this, their owner has passed away this morning. So that's breaking news that has come down just as we were doing this interview.
Oh, shoot. My condolences to the Braley family. That's really sad news to pass along. And it's been a sad year for CFL fans for a number of reasons, of course, without the season playing and now this news. So I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't like to end it on that note, but it's breaking news, and that's the type of thing, obviously, we need to report. David, thank you very much for doing this today. I always appreciate the conversation. We'll do it again soon. Be well, my friend.
Yeah, Scott, you as well. Take care.